You get dickheads in any society.
I never said that I thought it would be bad.
Are you high now?
Yeah.
The police arrived at my house. They came to my door.
This woman was supplying medicinal cannabis until the police rocked up.
Before they even entered, I said to them, anything that they took from my house could possibly result in the death of somebody.
And what did they do?
They entered my house and they took all the oil and they took the cannabis.
Meanwhile, her patients are running out of the drug they need.
Now that Jenny's been raided, I've got 3 and a bit months worth of oil left, if I'm lucky.
So how can this be happening when last February the government told us they'd delivered the missing piece in the journey towards seamless access to medicinal cannabis? Well, over the next half hour, you'll find out how that journey went off track. I'm Tom Tilley. Welcome to Hack.
When you're saving people's lives, the law shouldn't matter.
Triple J.
With Tom Tilley.
Now, the young male voice you just heard is Ben Oakley's. He's got a rare neurological condition that means for many years he's experienced extreme spasms and life in a wheelchair. Now, cannabis, for him, was a circuit breaker. And last year when the government announced you'd soon be able to get it legally, he was really excited. Now, he's desperate. He still can't get it legally. And Jenny Hallam, his supplier, was raided by police last month. Now, there are lots of people in this limbo situation, and it's been going on for years. Here's Sarah McVie with Jenny and Ben's story.
My name is Ben Oakley. I'm 21 years of age, from Wollongong area. Before I got sick, I was athletic, was triathlon fit. I did the Sydney to Geelong 2 weeks beforehand. Got my licence a week beforehand. I was working at my local fruit and deli. I loved driving. I loved the beach, the sound of the beach, the smell of it, you know, just to be able to get out and have the sand between your toes.
Ben was 17 years old. He was fit and strong, and he had dreams of joining the Navy.
21st of November 2012, at the age of 17, I decided to go out for a bike ride. All of a sudden, I started getting this extremely sharp pain in my right-hand side of my back. I didn't have any idea what was going on. I was on the ground and I couldn't quite move. I couldn't get up.
What Ben had thought was a pulled muscle was about to change his life completely.
Stiff person syndrome is a very rare neurological condition. It's a 1 in a million disease that affects only 4,500 of us worldwide.
Ben began having regular, uncontrollable spasms, which he feared would eventually kill him.
Every time I had a spasm, it was a matter of life and death. I shouldn't be here. It's as simple as that.
In the 4 years since he went for that ride, Ben's had to pull out of school, give up on the Navy, and resign himself to being cared for by his parents at a time when most of us get to first enjoy independence. He's traded his bike for a wheelchair and he's become a vocal medical cannabis campaigner.
Had you ever been a pot smoker in high school?
Never. I was pretty anti-drugs and still am. At the same time, unfortunately, I've got no other alternative but to be on drugs to keep me alive.
Like so many people using cannabis medicinally, Ben tried traditional medications first. Some didn't work. Others, like the strong opiate Endone, left him foggy and out of it.
I didn't really have much of a life anymore.
It was around this time that Ben got a message on Facebook from a woman in Adelaide.
I'm Jenny Hallam.
Jenny had heard about Ben and she wanted to help.
I contacted him after I saw his page, Roll On Ben Oakley, and it broke my heart.
We didn't even know her. The angel appeared out of nowhere and came to us.
Just like Ben, Jenny had been using opiates to treat her chronic pain. After 15 years on morphine, she decided she wanted to get off it.
I was on morphine, Lyrica and Endone, and I went off all of those within about 5 months.
She'd started making her own cannabis oil, and she says after feeling the benefits, she wanted to help other people who were suffering too. Soon she was supplying hundreds of sick people, free of charge, using donated cannabis to make the medicines.
I've never taken any money for what I've done. It's something that I think that people that are sick can't really afford to pay for.
Did you worry about breaking the law?
When you're saving people's lives, the law shouldn't matter. It's a stupid law. It's an outdated law.
I couldn't roll myself in the bed on my own. I couldn't walk.
For Ben, the spasms have all but stopped. He started walking short distances again. He's just recently been allowed to drive again. And he puts these gains down to cannabis.
Late last year, I pushed it out to a kilometre on the walking stick. I'm using the chair a lot less because I've improved so much.
How much of your improvement do you put down to medical cannabis?
Majority of it.
And then, just after New Year's, this happened.
The police arrived at my house. They came to my door.
Hack, Triple J.
Jenny Hallam, a medicinal cannabis supplier. We'll get back to her story in just a moment. As you heard, she's breaking the law to supply sick and dying people with medicinal cannabis. And we've been reporting on medicinal cannabis raids as far back as 2014, and it's still happening despite the government saying last February that they provided, and I quote, the missing piece in a patient's treatment journey. We will now see seamless access to locally produced medicinal cannabis products from farm to pharmacy. As you're hearing, it's far from seamless at this point. As well as the raids, we've closely followed the story of Dan Haslam, a young Tamworth man who put this issue on the political agenda. He eventually died from cancer, but his mum carried on the fight to provide legal access. And we're going to speak to Dan's mum, Lucy, in just a moment. First, let's find out what happened to Jenny Hallam when the police turned up at her house. Here's Sarah McVee.
The police arrived at my house. They came to my door. Before they even entered, I said to them, anything that they took from my house could possibly result in the death of somebody.
And what did they do?
They entered my house and they took all the oil and they took the cannabis.
Jenny's waiting on her fate. She hasn't been charged yet, but has been told to expect a court summons in the post. If she's done for trafficking, she could face up to 20 years in jail.
I'm prepared. I knew that there was a chance that that could happen all along. You know, when you take those sort of risks, that there's a possibility of that. I hope that that won't happen, but I knew that if I had a choice between saving people's lives and going to jail, that I knew which one I was going to take.
She deserves a medal, not to be jailed.
The raid has left patients like Ben worrying they'll run out of medication before they can get a legal supply.
Now that Jenny's been raided, I've got 3 and a bit months worth of oil left, if I'm lucky. So I've got to start rationing that out. I'm not going to be on a legal supply for the best part of 8 months or so. From what we're hearing,
you've probably heard that the laws around medical cannabis have been changing. Nationally, the government has rescheduled cannabis. That means people can apply for licences to grow it. The government's Office of Drug Control told Hack it's received 25 applications to either grow medical cannabis or make medical cannabis products. The application fee to grow it is $5,290. So far, nobody's been given a licence. Jenny Hallam is hoping to work with a Victorian company who's applied for a licence. She says she can't afford to go it alone.
Well, personally, I hadn't been able to because it's thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for those applications or those permits.
If you actually have a look at the hoops that you've got to go through to get it, yes, it's legal, but at the same time, it might as well not be.
For patients like Ben, there are a few ways to get medical cannabis. First, being part of one of the few medical trials underway. Second, going to an authorised prescriber. Or third, applying through the government's special access scheme to have medical cannabis imported from overseas. He says none of those options are as easy as they sound.
They've made it so damn restrictive that a lot of people have got no other alternative but to go for the black market.
Yeah. Mafia just goes on top of that.
In December, we told you about the first Queenslander to be approved under the scheme, 18-year-old Lindsay Carter.
It's changing my life. It
took him 19 months between applying to the state and federal governments and getting his medication.
I lost so much time at school and so much of my life, just my childhood, waiting for this to be able to use such a simple medication.
In a statement at the time, the Department of Health denied the applications take a long time. Jenny Hallam says she wants to see an amnesty for sick people using medical cannabis. That would mean people wouldn't be charged.
I'm not asking for an amnesty for myself. I'm asking only for an amnesty for the children. We beg that they give it to those who need to use it.
What impact has your raid had on your patients?
One person has already passed away. One is passing away as we speak, and there are a lot of people that are very scared.
Hack. Triple J. Jenny Hallam, a medicinal cannabis supplier who was raided by police in Adelaide last month, and Ben Oakley, whose story you just heard, will travel to Canberra next week to meet Bill Shorten and representatives from the Prime Minister's office and the Health Minister Greg Hunt's office. And speaking of Greg Hunt, the new Health Minister, we invited him on the show to give us a first-hand update on why the system is still failing people like Ben. He hasn't been able to find time in his diary. Hopefully he will soon. On the text line, what an effing joke. Get these old farts out of government so we can start making changes for the better. another listener. You say, it makes me angry to see this. I'd love to hear your reaction to this story. Send me a text, 0439 757 555. Jenny Hallam's barrister is in the studio with us to discuss her case. Heather Stokes, thank you for joining us. It's been over a month now since Jenny was raided.
That's right.
If she was caught with substantial quantities of cannabis, why hasn't she been charged?
I think the police department have taken the view that they are going to sit on it before they actually lay any charges. Partly that might be for forensic reasons, because they have to analyse it and see what percentage of cannabis oil comes within the regulations and the weights that the legislation covers in this state, and it's not dissimilar in other states. And partly, I think, because of the politics of the situation, the police department did itself no favours with this raid, and I know the police officers were concerned, were quite embarrassed by having to do it. And lastly, crucially, I think they're sitting back waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, given the weight of public opinion and the head of steam that this issue now has because of the raid on Jenny's premises. Now, the present pace of change is varying from state to state. Even where they're more advanced, it's still, as you've heard, hedged around with rules and regulations that make it very difficult to achieve. In South Australia, it's like watching Yes Minister. They've got a special committee set up and a task force to look at all this.
All right, well, if it is about politics, if that's why they haven't charged her, why do you think they raided her in the first place?
Someone has to have reported to them that she's got medicinal cannabis. Someone has had to make a decision that she therefore needs to be raided. That's a police matter. Where that complaint or report came from is an interesting matter of conjecture. It could have come from people who've threatened her in the past because she's providing it free, whereas they want to charge for it. It could be that since she was so well known as a cannabis campaigner, that some right-wing Christian with a bee in their bonnet has decided that something needs to be done about it.
Well,
all
these problems will be solved if the actual legal system was up and running. Now, if police and the courts were to throw the book at her for the amount of cannabis she had, sort of punishment, if they did though, what sort of punishment would she be up for?
She could go to jail for some years.
Okay.
In theory. But the reality is that it would be an unusual judge who would actually jail her for providing free cannabis oil to people who we can substantiate medicinally need it. No judge, no right-thinking judge, and no judge would actually jail her.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if that case actually came to the court, how that would pan out. Where will her case go from here, do you think?
Well, there's not much from a legal perspective that anybody can do until she actually gets charged, and that hasn't occurred yet. That's the whole point about reporting her. She's not charged. She's not on bail. There are no formal charges in any court. If and when they decide to charge her with something, then the Fourth Estate, i.e. you, the media, can go to town on it, and I hope you do. But until then, legally, there's not a lot we can do. It's more a matter of listening to people like Ben and reminding the politicians that the glacial pace of change at the moment is hurting people, including children, and maybe they need to think, well, what if this was my child?
Yeah, well, someone's texted into that exact effect. Sitting on it while people are dying, I'm absolutely furious. Heather, great to speak to you and get the update on Jenny's case. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, pleasure.
That's Heather Stokes, who is a barrister from Adelaide, representing Jenny Hallam, who was raided by police for supplying medicinal cannabis last month. Aidan on the text line, you say, how can these addictive strong prescription drugs be legal and cannabis still be unavailable for sick people? Ben from Sydney says, our politicians and police are pathetic. We are so far behind and the laws need to change because people are dying. Now, Jenny and Ben Oakley's situation is all too familiar to our next guest, Lucy Haslam. Her son was the face of the medicinal cannabis campaign. His name was Dan Haslam. Almost 2 years ago, he died fighting cancer and fighting for the legal supply and use of medicinal cannabis. And Lucy was right beside him all the way and beyond. Lucy, thanks for joining us again on Hack.
Thanks, Tom.
What's your reaction to this story of a sick young man running out of supply and a supplier potentially facing serious criminal charges?
Yeah, look, sadly, Ben's story is not unique. This is happening all around the country. Jenny, I believe, had many patients. There was a raid in Newcastle prior to Christmas to a supplier of upwards of 2,000 patients. So it's not a unique story. And, you know, it's kind of sad listening to people saying that when are they going to change the laws? The sad reality is that the laws have changed, and this is the regulation that has been written to sit in under those laws. So it is what it is, because that's the way it has been made to be by the bureaucrats.
Well, at that time last year when they introduced the new laws, the government were bragging about the work that they'd done. As I've mentioned a few times already on the show, the minister said, and it's in a press release, black and white, this is the missing piece in the puzzle. It's a missing piece in a patient's treatment journey, and we'll now see seamless access to locally produced medicinal cannabis. So have the bureaucrats completely bungled it, or is it just a matter of time? Do these things take time to get into place? Because it is a complex arrangement.
I believe it's been completely bungled. You might remember prior to the federal government putting in its Drugs and Narcotics Amendment Act, which it did at the 11th hour. Really, it was done to stop the regulator of medicinal cannabis bill from being implemented. And that was an initiative, a joint initiative of all the major parties, with Richard Di Natale heading that up. Richard saw that medical cannabis is not like regular pharmaceutical drugs and that it couldn't be treated the same way. And so they proposed in that bill to set up an independent regulator just for medical cannabis, which was entirely appropriate because he feared that it would be tied up in red tape and bogged down in the way that has exactly the way it has happened. So he foresaw the problems. The government chose to not listen to that logic. Decided that it was best to go through the TGA and to treat it as a pharmaceutical, which it is not. So barricades and brick walls have been put in front of patients at every turn. And, you know, even for doctors who want to become, you know, if a clinician wants to become a prescriber, the pathway is just so cumbersome that why would they bother? You know, so at every turn, patients are being harmed by this really poor public policy.
Kira's called in from Canberra. Kira, your dad has Parkinson's and has been using medicinal cannabis to deal with the symptoms. How's that working out for him?
It's been absolutely amazing. He suffers from Parkinson's and dyskinesia and suffers terrible, terrible pain. We came through a friend of a friend about 6 months ago. We managed to get something. They were scared. My dad was scared of trying it at first. But it's absolutely transformed him, how he copes every day with the pain, his ability to rest. We've tried to get more, but the person who we got it off is scared that they might be under investigation. So it's stopped. And my dad basically has one day's supply left, and then he's facing a future of pain and agony again. And as a family, we don't know where to turn. I work in a corporate job. I'm afraid to ask people about these things, and it's just devastating.
So have you guys applied through the special access scheme to get access to medicinal cannabis legally?
We don't have a huge amount of knowledge about it. They live rurally. They've found out about trials, but because they live rurally, outside of Canberra, it just everything seems too impossible. And I guess it's hard. My parents have never drunk or smoked or anything, and they just don't know what to do or how to do it. There's no knowledge around it. It just happened that, for the grace of God, I stumbled across something, that's been brilliant. But it's sad, and it's devastating.
Yeah, and time's ticking in the case of your dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kira, great to speak to you. Thanks for sharing your story.
No problem.
In the studio with us today as we talk about medicinal cannabis and the very slow, and as Lucy Haslam says, bungled rollout of new legislation to give people legal access to the drug. We're asking all the questions to try and find out what's going on here. And Lucy, we couldn't get an interview with the health minister today, but we did get a statement from his office. And they say that actually 61 people have been granted special access to medicinal cannabis in the last 10 years. So does that mean people are getting access through the proper channels?
Look, I'd really like to know what those products are. I bet not too many of them are botanical products. Some of them, probably the bulk of them, would be products such as Sativex, which is produced by GW Pharmaceuticals and which has been approved for use, you know, for some years, but has never really taken off because, A, patients don't find a great deal of satisfaction with it, and it's incredibly expensive. So I think they're being a bit selective with how they report the statistics, and really that's a 10-year period. So
How things have changed since the legislation came out last year.
No, it would be interesting. It would be more interesting to know how many people in the last 12 months and how long those applications took. And I noticed that you drew mention of the young man in Queensland and how Lindsay took 19 months to get his supply. When he actually got that supply, it was a 3-month supply. So then he has to go through that process again. So if you do the math, if it takes 19 months to get 3 months supply, you know, that's not a very good system for somebody who's battling a brain tumour. You know, why should people have to do this? The onus is all on the patient. The patient has to find the product somewhere in the world. They have to apply to import it into their state. They have to apply to the TGA to have it, you know, approved to be imported. It has to meet a lot of requirements of the TGA. You know, it's ridiculous. At every level, it's set up to be a problem for patients. And, you know, and all the while, you have to have a specialist doctor who's bothering to fill out all these mountains of paper. Doctors just find it incredibly onerous. And, you know, and why would they bother to do it? It sends all the messages that this is really still bad medicine and you shouldn't be doing it, which is, you know, quite contrary to what the Health Minister, Susan Ley, was saying at the time of passing the legislation.
You're listening to Lucy Haslam, whose son Dan died fighting cancer and fighting for medicinal cannabis to be legalised almost 2 years since he passed. And we'll come back to Lucy in a moment and find out how far another mother went to get legal access to medicinal cannabis. But first, I've got two other important developments to bring you up to speed on.
PAC, never before in this country has such a measure been proposed.
On Triple J with Tom Tilley.
Yesterday we brought you the news that the government had introduced legislation that would make you wait 4 weeks before getting the dole. The other controversial element was pushing back the age at which you go from youth allowance to New Start. Currently that happens when you turn 22, but they want to push that up to 25, which would mean you'd lose $45 a week for those 3 intervening years. Now, if you're worried that this might put you out of pocket, then take heart. The South Australian Senator Nick Xenophon is not keen on these measures, and when Labor and the Greens won't back legislation, they'll need the votes of Xenophon and his fellow senators. Here's what he said about the measures.
We do not support in any way changing that 4-week waiting period. We believe it is onerous on young people. In terms of shifting people to the youth allowance, we have very real concerns about that. But as far as the 4-week waiting period goes, forget about it.
PAC on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
Changing Australia Day has also been discussed in Canberra today. The National Senator John Williams put up a motion that said, we confirm that Australia Day will continue to be celebrated on the 26th of January each year. It passed the Senate, that motion. The Greens put up a motion to actually change Australia Day from January 26, and it was voted down.
PAC. It's a case of life and death.
Triple J.
Now, we've been talking about medicinal cannabis on the show for years now. Back in 2014, we brought you a story about a woman called Cherie. She was giving her toddler, Abby, medicinal cannabis to deal with the seizures that she was having. Here's some of that story from 2014.
Hi. What a beautiful smile.
I first realised that there was something different with her when she was roughly 2 months old. She was on my chest and she had what I thought was a seizure. In the end, she was having seizures up to 45 minutes long. The doctor's aim was to get her well enough to send her home to die. before starting the medical marijuana, she wouldn't be able to do anything. She just slept pretty much all the time. But now she's rolling over, she's playing with a toy, you know, she's lifting her head up for times. She's even lifting it backside up off the ground.
Do you worry that you're going to be arrested or that something's going to happen to you?
I have been told to expect a knock at the door from the police, but I'd do anything for my kids. And if this is going to save her life, then of course I'm going to do it.
That's Cherie, and she was talking about her baby who was suffering from a condition that led to extreme seizures. That was 2014. At the time, Abby's supplier wrote to the ACT Chief Minister and Health Minister, Katie Gallagher, to tell her what success they were having. They also included a photo in that letter to the minister. That turned out to be a bad move because the supplier was then raided.
I told the minister that I had had this extraordinarily brilliant success with Abby using a cannabis tincture, and I wanted her to be aware of it. The minister sent the federal police to stop me doing what I'm doing with Abby, and subsequently I was raided.
So soon after that raid, I actually interviewed the Chief Minister and the Health Minister, Katie Gallagher, to ask her why she told the police about the supplier.
As the law stands at the moment, marijuana is a prohibited substance, and I have responsibilities on me as Chief Minister under child protection laws, if nothing else, that information had to be passed on. I had a responsibility under law to do that. What if I, you know, did nothing with that information?
Katie Gallagher, and as you can hear, it was a difficult situation then, and it's a difficult situation now. 3 years have actually passed now, and Abby, the toddler in that story, is now 5 years old. Here's Sarah McVee calling her mum, Cherie, to find out how she kept Abby alive.
Hey, Cherie, how are you going?
Yeah, not too bad.
What did you decide to do?
We packed up our lives and moved overseas where it's legal.
Gosh, what a huge decision.
Yeah.
Cherie has six kids. Two of them are on medical cannabis. You've already heard about Abby, who has a rare condition called CDKL5, which causes seizures.
And then we have Wyatt, also on medical cannabis for his autism and ADHD.
Cherie says before they moved, she was waiting for that knock on the door.
That was the next step, that they'd take the kids, and I wasn't prepared for that to happen. Where we are now, it's legal and both of them have a prescription, so it's supplied.
And what does that mean for your life now that you don't have to worry about this anymore?
Well, it's stress-free in the aspect of medical cannabis and the kids' use and being calmer and no more seizures. But it's hard because I've left everything that I've known.
Do you think you'd ever come back to Australia?
I don't know, honestly. Unless it's legalised, I doubt it.
Well, the federal government has said, you know, that they've changed the rules to allow for cultivation of crops and there's access schemes. Do you think that in practice that works?
No, if anything, it's made it harder because they are going after the people that are supplying it for free.
So how does it work in Canada?
First off, you have to go and see a doctor and have it prescribed, obviously. And then the prescription gets sent to a supplier of your choice. And once that's all gone through the system, all you do is you log on to a patient portal and you go through all of the products that they've got and decide what's best for each condition. You purchase it, whether you want to purchase the dry buds and make your own medical cannabis, which I'm currently doing, or you can buy the pre-made oils. Basically, after you've paid, it gets shipped to your door.
How long did it take for you to get on the system once you moved there?
About a month. And I think the best thing is the fact that they've now brought out legislation that patients can apply to actually grow their own medication.
What would your message to the Australian government be based on what you've seen in Canada?
Wow, it can be done. It's really simple. It's easy to do. If you need to know how to do it, speak to Canada.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
That's Cherie, who moved her family to Canada just to get legal access to cannabis. On the text line, we're so stupid. There are countries with successful medicinal programs. Why aren't we following their framework? Another person says, what other drug would be released without due process? The science is limited and a proper system will take time. Well, let's get Lucy Haslam's reaction to Cherie's story. Lucy, she just said that we should follow the Canadian model. Do you think it's a good model to follow?
Look, not specifically the Canadian model. I mean, I'm not going to recommend one or the other, but I think what she's saying is it can be done well overseas. It is done in many jurisdictions, and basically our regulations were written without the advice of an expert advisory council. So the government had promised to do that at the time that the legislation passed. They never followed up on that. The regulations were written by somebody without expertise in the area, and now we've got what we've got. So, you know, we need to get real and we need to have those regulations changed before the concrete sets. And, you know, before we send more people like Abby and her family to live in another part of the world because they can't be looked after from a health point of view in their own country. I think it's really sad.
Yeah, well, it's certainly making a lot of people on the text line very sad and wanting to know what they can do to help. It seems like there is further to go on this fight to make it happen. Lucy Haslam, I know you'll keep fighting it, talking to federal and state politicians. Thanks so much for joining us again on the show.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the fight. Thank you.
On the text line, drug law reform is what's required. JP Somerville says, Tom, what can we do? We need a voice. This is disgusting.
Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.